Should have checked. Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call the House Transportation Committee to order. Today is Tuesday, March 12th, 2024. We are in room 124 of the Barnes Committee Room, Alaska State Capitol. Let the record reflect that the time is 1:03 p.m. Today we have President Representative McKay, Representative Vance, Representative Mina, and myself, Chair McCabe. The staff assisting us today are Linda Jensen with House Records, Susan Quigley with the LIO, and Angela Steffel, my committee aide. Thank you, ladies, for your service. If everyone could please silence their cell phones. Today we canceled the presentation from the Department of Revenue Financing Infrastructure in Alaska, and we will have that again at a future date. So we will only have HB 386 with the short title of Obstruction of Public Places Trespassing. Introducing the and presenting the bill today, we have from the Department of Law, the State Attorney General Craig Taylor, and Senior Assistant Attorney General Parker Patterson. We'll be given a bill introduction, take up questions, and then set the bill aside to continue it on Thursday for public testimony. Gentlemen, if you could begin or place your names on the record and begin your introduction.
Thank you. My name is Craig Taylor. I'm the Attorney General for the State of Alaska.
Parker Patterson, Senior Assistant Attorney General.
Appreciate the time of this committee, House Transportation Committee, to present this bill and to have a discussion about what the bill entails and sort of go through exactly what it does. So in an overview, basically, Alaskans have a constitutional right to move about the state freely and to access public places. Alaskans also have the right to peaceably assemble, to protest. And so what this bill does, HB 386, is an attempt to balance these two constitutional rights in a way that protects both rights and protects Alaskans. The freedom of movement. Alaska's right to freely move within the state is violated when their access to public places and facilities is unlawfully obstructed. Now, unlawful obstructions can cause a threat to public safety, an event of emergencies, preventing emergency personnel, and unlawful obstruction can also be a threat to Alaska's economy. HB 386 imposes additional criminal penalties for obstruction of public places, which will be a new crime, and creates a civil cause of action for our private citizens whose access is unlawfully obstructed. The bill is meant to discourage some of the practices we are seeing elsewhere and prevent them from becoming a problem here. So that first bullet point needs a bit of a correction there. The blocking of access to public places is a new crime that is presented by the bill, but the conduct of blocking traffic is already codified as a criminal act under AS 2834-140. We also note here that freedom of expression, freedom of assembly, that is already subject to time, place, and matter restrictions from the various court decisions that we've seen over the years. The proposed bill targets the conduct of blocking access to public places and does not target Alaskans' right to peacefully and lawfully assemble. There is currently no remedy for Alaskans in the event that they are blocked or from a public place. This helps prevent Alaskans from engaging in self-help, meaning taking care of an obstruction by themselves, right? We can obviously see that those escalations could escalate rapidly and become dangerous. These are some of the things that we're seeing around the United States. We recently had protesters bodily block traffic for the President Biden's State of the Union address. We also saw Trump supporters use their cars to block access to a bridge in New York. Most recently on Monday in Virginia, pro-Palestinian protesters blocked an interstate, and their governor had this to say. He said, it's unacceptable to block interstates, endanger the lives of Virginians, and cause mayhem on our roads. And that's exactly what this bill is meant to prevent. Alaska's different. We always say that. We hear it all the time, but it's true. And in this case, it especially is different. In other places, there are multiple ways to get from point A to point B. In Alaska, that is limited, sometimes with just one road. And so These are some of the types of obstructions that we think could occur that would have devastating impact on Alaska. One, Seward Highway obstructing the Seward south of Anchorage blocks the Kenai Peninsula from access to the Port of Alaska and Ted Stevens International Airport. And I think we know that it takes less than a week for those stores in Kenai to have some empty shelves. Next, on the Glen Highway, if you obstruct the Glen Highway north of Anchorage, it blocks every community north of Anchorage on the road system from Ted Stevens International Airport and the Port of Alaska. Another possible obstruction that would be devastating would be at Dalton Highway if they obstructed the Hall Road during mobilization season. That could have devastating impacts on the oil patch. And then Highway 2, obstructing the road just inside the Canadian border on the Alaska side, could block all road traffic, or almost all road traffic, into Alaska. You imagine a scenario where you have hundreds and hundreds of RVs stacked up because of obstruction, people running out of fuel, people running out of food. Obviously, it put a dent in the economy as well because those same people aren't spending money in Alaska. If you'd like, Chair, would you like to hear a sectional?
Sure. You might as well... this is perfect, actually.
Okay.
If you wanted to put this on the record, that'd be great.
All right. Thank you. Want to go ahead, Parker?
Parker Patterson, again, for the record, Senior Assistant Attorney General, Department of Law, Civil Division. Mr. Chair, I will run through a quick sectional. Section 1 amends AS 02.20.050A by making it a crime to generally obstruct a runway of an airport. Section 2 adds two new subsections to that same provision, which add new penalties for the crime of obstruction of airports, classifying them as Class C felonies and Class A misdemeanors. Section C is a conforming amendment to AS 02.20.060B. Section 4 establishes a civil cause of action for an individual whose passage is obstructed by somebody whose conduct violates one of the criminal provisions of this bill. It establishes a tiered set of statutory damages, which a successful plaintiff can collect in addition to other damages. It provides for liability for those who aid or encourage or conspire to help somebody obstruct access in Alaska. And it provides also for the possibility of injunctive relief. Section 5 amends the crime of criminal trespass in the first degree by increasing it to a Class C felony where the conduct creates substantial risk of physical injury or interference with emergency response. Section 6 amends criminal trespass in the second degree to make it a Class A misdemeanor where it involves the same types of dangers. Section 7 accounts for amendments in Section 8 with a conforming change. And Section 9... Section 8 makes obstructing a highway by dropping a substance on the highway a Class C felony if it creates a substantial risk of injury or emergency response, and otherwise highway obstructions are left a Class A misdemeanor. Section 9 creates a new crime, which is obstruction of free passage in public places, a Class A misdemeanor if the conduct again creates substantial risk of physical injury or interferes with emergency response. Important to note that this does not cover conduct which is permitted by appropriate authorities. Section 10 amends the crime of obstruction of a navigable water by increasing it to a Class A misdemeanor, again, where the conduct creates substantial risk of injury or interference with emergency response. Section 11 provides that all the criminal provisions are prospective only, and Section 12 provides an effective date of July 1, 2024.
Thank you.
Thank you. With your permission, we'll proceed with the rest of the presentation.
Very good.
So the bill is content neutral. It doesn't matter what you're trying to convey or what your reasoning is for it. It's basically if you obstruct a roadway, you obstruct a waterway, you obstruct runway, or you struck somebody's passage into a public place, that is going to become a criminal act. In the case, it'll be a new crime, and the obstruction of free passage in public places. In the instance of obstruction of airports, runways, navigable waterways, and highways, it'll be increased penalties. And in the case of criminal trespass, it'll be increased penalties. And the key is you know, the knowing, I think most of these have in common, is a knowingly creates a substantial risk of physical injury or interferes with emergency response. The bill allows Alaskans to seek a remedy when these rights of access are granted. Again, they don't have to engage in self-help. It'll deter, hopefully, actors that want to come up and obstruct our ability to do business in Alaska and our ability of our citizens to freely move about the state and enjoy what the state has to offer. And it upholds Alaskans' constitutional right to assembly and to demonstrate. Again, as Parker had mentioned in his portion in the sectional, that this if it's a permitted activity, if you expect a large gathering of protesters and you apply to the city of Juneau, you apply to the city of Anchorage, and you receive a permit, then this bill does not cover that activity unless, of course, it exceeds the permit. Right now what would happen is, you know, if there's an obstruction of the highways, right now it's a violation, so it's subject to a $1,000 fine. And violations aren't typically arrestable offense. So then you have officers currently wondering, well, what action can we take here? We've assessed a fine. And the other issue that this bill is attempting to address is the fact that these global organizations are funding these and are gladly paying those fines, because in a budget of a couple million, what's a couple $1,000 fines? And so idea is to increase those penalties to keep these actors and protect Alaskans.
Thanks. And for the record, I'd like to note that Representative Johnson joined us at 1:05. Sorry I waited so long. Whoever's keeping track of that. So I guess what I'll do now is open it up to any questions by committee members, if that's okay with you, Mr. Taylor. Who's first? Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. Through the chair, thank you, Attorney General Taylor, for meeting with our office on the bill and for allowing us to ask a couple of questions. One basic question that I have with this legislation is on defining an obstruction, and I want to get more clarity on what an obstruction is. If an individual obstructs, let's say, one lane of a road, does that classify as an obstruction that would harm the public's ability to move, even if there's other lanes that they could move around?
Right. No. Representative Mina, through the chair, you know, obstruction is defined as knowingly rendering a highway impassable or passable only with unreasonable inconvenience or hazard. So if it creates an unreasonable inconvenience or a hazard, then that is obstruction. If they completely block it off, that clearly is obstruction. So again, this is one of those, often as prosecutors, often as law enforcement, we make calls when we get to a scene or whether we charge these crimes, and we look at whether or not it fits that, and ultimately it is a judgment call by the responding officer, and it's a judgment call by the prosecuting attorney.
Thank you.
Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question on Section 9 that kind of continues this conversation, and that is how you would define unreasonable inconvenience, because I think you could see on the Kenai Peninsula during the summer tourist season and dip netters and a lot of slow moving vehicles that people consider that unreasonably inconvenienced.
Yeah.
So I think this needs to be very clear on what this is and what would qualify as a crime of obstruction, so that the public knows what is knowingly obstructive.
Yeah.
You could just clarify that.
Yeah, Representative Vance, through the chair, glad to answer that. Part of it is the same response I gave to Representative Mina. It's going to be a bit of a judgment call by responding officers. The other part of this is the mens rea that's needed in order to commit these crimes. In criminal statute, when there's not a mens rea specifically mentioned, it falls to knowingly. And so basically you'd have to have individuals knowingly creating this obstruction, intentionally creating this obstruction. If it's a case of a beat up old Ford F-150 that's rusted through the bed and fish coolers hanging off the side, that probably isn't going to fall under this, right? Because they're not knowingly trying to create an obstruction. They're just trying to fill their freezers with fish. And so that this wouldn't apply to those to as criminal conduct in that case. And the knowingly, that definition is the person is aware that the conduct is of that nature, or that the circumstances exist, or is aware of the substantial probability of its existence. So that knowingly is defined in statute in AS 1181-900.
Olive?
Thanks. And just for the record, we've been joined by Representative Sumner at 118. And go ahead with your follow-up, Representative Vance.
Thank you. And thank you for the clarification on different vehicles. With that, I'm going to venture off of the original intent of the bill for the sake of just imagining that same, you know, pickup truck, you know, going to their favorite fishing spot. And what if they park in the road that says, I really like this spot to myself? Would this fall under the crime of obstruction to public places?
My sense is if they're parked on the side of the road in an area that says no parking or no parking permitted, the violation would be no parking, right? We're not going to I don't see officers trying to escalate that situation into an obstruction. Now, if the individual parked his vehicle across the road intentionally to keep people from fishing in his favorite fishing hole until he filled his cooler, that certainly could rise to this crime.
Thank you.
Thanks. Anybody else? So I have a couple questions. I have heard guides that have flown out to an area to go bear hunting, and to protect that area, they have built or pitched a tent on a runway. It's not sometimes not necessarily, I guess this has to be a state runway or for the aviation part, or a certified runway or public use runway, public runway?
Chair, I'm not sure of the answer to that question, but I can certainly look into that. Parker, are you aware?
I'm not.
Okay.
So my question is, it says public use airport is the language I was looking for real quick. And that can be defined as lots of things. It could be, it could be a village airport, Yuzinki or Port Lions. Or a public use may be the runway out at Lake George there at the it's a runway because thousands of airplanes have landed there. It's well defined. It's public use. And if somebody got a wild hair and said, "Hey, I don't want anybody else to come out here today because my family and I are camping," and he parked his airplane across the runway or pulled the picnic table over there, I'm worried about the public use definition, maybe.
Right.
Probably where I'm going with it.
Chair McCabe, the obstruction of airports is already, or runways is already against the law, and I'm not sure what the definition of an airport is to be able to answer that question. My guess, if I had to guess, and I'm watching everybody get nervous here as I guess, but my guess is that would be applicable. If it's on public land and it is a runway that is commonly used by the public, I think that would fall under that definition. But again, we'd have to go look at it, and maybe even case law, to determine what the courts think that means.
Yeah, I'd be kind of interested in that, maybe even not so much for this bill, but because there are numerous accounts of guides doing this to prevent other guides and other hunters from accessing their favorite hunting area or wherever the caribou herd is at the time or that sort of thing. So they obstruct the little landing thing that the Super Cubs land on, landing area.
Yeah, Chair McCabe, I'd also say that probably likely falls under the obstruction of public places. I think you could probably look at which one is applicable and charge that. Clearly, that new crime of obstruction of public places would account for that. I think most people think that that's already a crime, right? I think if I asked, my neighbors, where they thought you could block the Museum of Art from people going inside to view an exhibit, they would tell you you couldn't do that. But currently under the law, there's no restriction on that.
Representative Sumner. Okay, I have one more question then. And I guess Representative Vance has one. Oh, Representative Johnson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, I'm curious about emergency response and the fact that does it actually require an incident where they blocked a fire truck or an ambulance or a policeman, or is it could potentially, because, I mean, no one knows when there's an emergency, and what happens if they're blocking for an emergency response and they move out of the way? Mm-hmm. Does that exonerate them from that? Or if they're just in a position where they could obstruct an emergency response?
Right. Representative Johnson, through the chair, the two elements there are knowingly creates a substantial risk of physical injury or interferes. I think the interference has to be actual interference with emergency response. And you can see how that could quickly happen, right? If you have somebody blocking a highway or a roadway and there's 60 cars piled up and an ambulance is trying to get through, you've seen that situation at crash sites, right, where people slowly pull off and try to get out of the way of emergency responders, but that emergency responders is certainly delayed by that line of traffic.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Representative Sumner.
Through the chair. So, yeah, actually, that raises a question for me. Is there like a durational period that they have to block it for, or just the instant that they block it, they've committed a crime? Or
so I think it would be, again, this is going to be a little bit up to the discretion of the responding officers, and then when it's referred to the prosecutor, having the discretion of the prosecutor look at these. But if you knowingly create a substantial risk of physical injury, to me that means it's got to be more than a momentary. If I was looking at this in the lens of a prosecutor, I would think that just a momentary blockage of a road is probably not going to rise to this. Now, that person doesn't know what's coming down that road, and so that momentary, if that momentary blockage happens to block an ambulance or a fire engine, then certainly you could obstruct, you could charge obstruction in that case.
Follow up through the chair. What if the railroad parked their train across part of a main road and obstructed emergency vehicles?
You know, I think that there is a potential for that, right? Say the railroad parked their train across the road intentionally to keep people from accessing a reservoir on the other side of the road, and you have emergency response firefighters trying to fill up tankers with water, and if that obstruction occurs, I think potentially you could have a person here is not defined as an individual. Person here is could be a company, a corporation, and individuals.
Okay, thanks. I have a couple questions, and Representative Mina has a question, so I'll let her go first.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. To the chair, I have a question related to permits, if I may. I understand the bill seeks to balance public safety and transportation with First Amendment rights, and there's a provision in the bill, I believe it's on page 4, section 9, lines, I don't have the lines offhand, but it doesn't apply to a permit for a rally or a protest. And I know that the presentation speaks to areas where us in government have the ability to restrict freedom of assembly and the First Amendment. And I'm curious how you see the role of permits. Is the role of a permit to manage a large gathering of people, or is it to allow freedom of assembly and the First Amendment?
Representative Mina, through the chair, this is largely going to be decisions from municipalities, as they're the ones that determine when is a permit needed. Is it needed when you have over 50 people? Is it needed when you have over 100 people? They make those types of policy decisions. And so in the event that the municipality requires a permit at a certain number of people, or if they're intending to take up a roadway to put up, you know, tents and a cotton candy machine and things for the kids to enjoy while they protest, then that's going to be a completely, that's going to be a call from the municipality of Anchorage. That's not something the state would interfere with.
May I follow up?
Follow up.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. Through the chair, could you speak to situations where permits are denied and why they might be denied?
Representative Mina, through the chair, I can't speak to that. I haven't been involved in those denial of permits. I'm unaware of any denial of those permits. I'm sure they do occur. But again, that is a municipal level policy call. And so I'm not involved in those decisions.
One more follow-up.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, could you speak to different First Amendment conduct that doesn't require a permit?
Representative Mina, through the chair, I think we see that instance of that right outside the Capitol, right? We've got individuals out there holding up a single sign, not blocking the roadway, but making clear their views on whatever policy issue that they care about. And I think that is an example of something that probably doesn't rise to the level of permit, and that would be permitted activity, assuming that, again, they're not laying across the road to prevent people from coming to the legislative building to talk to their legislators.
Thank you.
Yep.
Anybody else? So we talked about timing a little bit. So what if there's a whole group of people on the Glen, and this is a what if, I get that, but they glue their hands to the pavement and they obstruct traffic for 40,000 cars behind them between Anchorage and wherever they are. The cops coming in, get them all cleaned up, and an hour after they're gone, that they're in the paddy wagon on their way to jail or whatever, traffic is still pretty well snarled, and a ambulance tries to get through to go to Matsu Regional, and the patient dies or something because of that snarl. So now the people are gone, traffic is still snarled, obstructed, and an emergency vehicle can't get through. I mean, I think a little bit of the timing that what Representative Sumner said kind of triggered that, because it takes 2 or 3 hours sometimes for that bubble of traffic to become unobstructed, if you will. So,
yeah. Representative McCabe, I think that would qualify, right? If they've knowingly obstructed, they have to know that there are consequences. If there's 4,000 cars piled up, that delay is going to take a while to clean itself up. And I think that they the penalty could be upped because of that, interfering with emergency response to a Class C felony in that case.
Thanks. And so in my office, when you came in, we talked about this. You mentioned self-help, and you said it again in here. So we've seen various YouTube videos of self-help, what we consider self-help. So maybe we could further define what you're talking about.
Representative McCabe, yes, the self-help that we're trying to prevent, right, is just what you've seen, is individuals rising frustrations. I've got a cement truck full of cement that I need to get to the job site ASAP, or we're going to have to rip up a foundation, or we're going to have to clean out this cement truck. And so you can see how tensions could rise, or just simply trying to get to your kid's soccer game, right? You've made a promise to your kid to be at the soccer game, and that you've got somebody glued to the street in front of you. And so the idea behind this bill is to keep that from happening. Because right now, again, if a trooper or APD or Juno PD pulls up on that situation, the options right now are sort of write a violation, write a ticket. And so this would allow officers to clearly have an arrestable offense that they could remove them from the site, and prevent sort of the self-help from taking, you know, I think of self-help in the context of apartment buildings, because my wife happens to own a lot of apartments buildings. And so the law tries to keep landowners from going in and removing tenants that are delinquent. And this is the same type of process that would occur.
Thanks. So that segues nicely into my final question is permits. So I've been involved in strikes, union labor strikes and that sort of thing. Almost without exception, we had to get a permit from the city before we would go out and walk in a picket line, block the business or walk in a picket line in front of the business. And every time the permit had some restrictions, but mostly it was to provide what we're talking about here is to allow. So we might be able to only picket until 4:30 in the afternoon because at 5 o'clock, all of Wall Street lets out and there's so many people that a strike would be obstructing them and creating another issue or another public issue. The First Amendment, I don't think the permits are designed to block the First Amendment, but I think as humans, we need to understand that you're absolutely free to exercise your First Amendment rights. What you're not free from is the consequences of doing that, such as if you block an ambulance or if you yell fire in a theater, which is the classic thing, or if you block a bunch of people on Wall Street from getting out of their building. Those kinds of things, I think, is what the permits, or at least the ones that we had, were designed to prevent. And I think everybody understood that. So when you talk about self-help and this being preventative, what you're trying to do is prevent the consequences either to the people protesting or to the public that might have something happen, need an ambulance, cement truck, that whole thing, right?
Representative McKay, that's exactly right. And you know, you could see how that could easily escalate, right? If you have a group of people blocking access to, again, I'm going to go with the Museum of Art example because that tends to instill a lot of strong feelings in people depending on what the exhibits are in those places, right? And if you have people that are attempting to block and you've got other people trying to enter, that's just a recipe for an escalation of violence. And this prevents that from happening because, again, it gives the officers an arrestable offense where they can remove the threat before it does become violent.
So, sorry, I know you're waiting. A good chunk of this is to allow the officers to remove people from the situation instead of just issuing a ticket and allowing them to stay there.
That's exactly right. But in the case of obstruction of a public place, that isn't even a crime right now. That's not even a ticketable offense. And so that's the new portion of that that's added to.
Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attorney General Taylor, I think I appreciate, you know, the intent of this bill is very clear. But as I apologize for going back to Section 9 on the obstruction of free passage in public places, but as we're talking and thinking through different scenarios, I'm remembering a situation on the to access the beach at the Kasilof. And people park alongside the roadways and things like that. But there was a medical situation where an emergency vehicle could not get through the road just because people traditionally are stacked up, and the borough has had to try to, you know, make sure that that roadway is clear because of emergency vehicles. And can you clarify? I mean, you've mentioned that, like in the cases of restricting, you know, public spaces like museums and things like that, there's no law. Is that the case in situations of roadways to access our parks, our rivers, you know, where it's these side roads and trails that people are using, you know, traditionally to go fishing and hunting, where they just park along the side road, the roadway, because that's what's there, where, hey, their intent is to get there fishing and they're going to park wherever they can. Would this law apply to them if they did in fact block the roadway, or is the knowingly producing kind of a ill intent here? Is that what has to be proven?
What has to be, Representative Vance, through the chair, what has to be proven is that the person knowingly causes that and allows the highway to create a substantial risk of injury or interferes with emergency response. So I guess in this case, if certainly if emergency response did respond to an incident on the Casillo off a dip netter getting pulled in by a giant king, which was all of our dreams, you would clearly have a violation in that case for those individuals that chose to block to park in the middle of the highway. The tougher call would be creates a substantial risk of injury, right? Now, I will say on the obstruction of highways, there's two escalations that occur in this bill. One is both become Class C felony, and Class C felony is presumptive 0 to 2 years, up to 5 years, right? And so Class C felony is bumped because right now it's just a violation that we've talked about. It's just a fine. So Class C felony occurs if knowingly causes or allows any substance that creates substantial risk of injury to the others to drop on the highway. So that's the case of an individual intentionally throwing boxes of nails out onto the highway in order to prevent passage. The other Class C felony is when they knowingly render a highway impassable or passable only with the unreasonable inconvenience or hazard. Now that alone is just a Class A misdemeanor. But when you add on also knowingly creates the substantial risk of physical injury or interferes with emergency response, that's when it becomes a Class C felony in that case. So I hope I answered your question.
Through the chair.
Follow up.
For clarification, there's currently no law on the books for the situations that I described on the Casillo where people are kind of stacking up vehicles and it's not exactly passable for the larger emergency vehicles. Am I understanding that correctly?
There is a violation, but not a crime.
Thank you.
Yep.
Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. Through the chair, could you speak to how often the current fines for obstructing highways are enforced?
Representative Mina, through the chair, I don't have that information in front of me. I can't speak to that. I could look to see if we could find those numbers. We'd have to probably, because it is a fine, it wouldn't rise to the level of prosecutors or my office being involved. It would be done at the local law enforcement level, whether that be troopers, APD, Juno PD, or whichever law enforcement entity it is to write those violations. So I really can't speak to that. And we could try. I think it'd be difficult to sort of get our hands around that number.
Follow up.
Thank
you, Chairman Cape. Through the chair, could you speak to how often obstructions on highways happened?
Representative Mina, through the chair, we're aware in Alaska of a couple situations where those obstructions have occurred in Alaska. There's been instances on the North Slope where there's been some groups that have tried to get in the way of a drilling season. There's been other instances of people blocking remote roads at a certain point. And in all those instances, I've only been involved in sort of one of those, and that was the blocking of a remote road. And the question was, what do we do about it? And we didn't have a good answer. Luckily, there was nobody on the other side of that road trying to get back into civilization, or there was nobody that needed emergency help. And so that situation eventually fizzled into nothing, but it very well could have been a problem. And so the idea is what we're seeing in the lower 48, what we're seeing around the world, we're trying to prevent here. We don't want that to happen, because I think even a day on the Seward would have devastating economic impacts on businesses in Anchorage and the Valley.
May I follow up?
Follow up.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. Through the chair, going to the example of the blockage of a remote road, understanding that the intent of the bill is to deter potential escalations of violence at a protest or a rally or an action. If there are a small number of individuals that are blocking a remote road, is the bill's intent to prevent violence that might happen at an event like that?
Representative Mina, through the chair, that is indeed part of the reason behind this bill, is we're trying to prevent Alaskans from taking matters in their own hands in these situations.
Thank you.
Thanks, Attorney General Taylor. So I think what we'll do is set this bill aside for now, unless anybody else has any more questions. I should have mentioned as well that I have a plethora of people online. If you have any questions for the state troopers or the DOT maintenance or the Anchorage Airport Police and Fire or a property management, Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. May I ask a question to the troopers online?
Sure. So it's Lieutenant Robert French. If you're online, Representative Mina has a question for you. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair to Lieutenant French, how often are there obstructions on state roads? And additionally, how often is there the enforcement of fining people who are blocking state roads?
For the record, this is Lieutenant Robert French with the Alaska State Troopers. Representative Mina, through the chair, I am not aware of the exact numbers in those cases. I'll have to try to find that information for you.
Thank you.
That'd be great, Lieutenant French. If you, when you find that, you can email it to me, and I'll get it to the rest of the committee, or you can email it to, I think it's house.transportation@akleg.gov. That would be awesome. One of the things, Attorney General Taylor, that I'm interested in, hearing some of the questions here, Alaskans, especially some Alaskans, don't have a lot of common sense sometimes when they're headed to go fishing and they park in the middle of the road or they park on the side of the road, not thinking that they might be obstructing traffic. This isn't designed for that necessarily. This is designed for people who knowingly have an objective to block traffic and to stop traffic to make a point.
Representative McCabe, that's exactly right.
Okay. All right. Anybody else? Nobody else? Okay. Seeing no other questions from committee members, I'm going to set this bill aside. Our next meeting will be Thursday, March 14th, when we'll hear from Jackson Fox and Bryce Ward from the Fairbanks Metropolitan Planning Organization called FAST. We'll take up amendments and have public testimony on HB 122 and then begin public testimony on this bill, HB 386. So we will have a lot to go through on Thursday, so if everybody could please be on time, that would be great. Seeing no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect that the time is 1:45 p.m.